People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Fine Music Radio, and Rodney Trudgeon introducing you to another edition of People of Note. In a sense, I have a colleague with me today, because I don't know about you, but I've always been fascinated by astronomy, even when I was at school. And these days, with all these massive telescopes going up, we're finding out so much about our universe and beyond that it makes for constant riveting reading and photographs. And these spacecraft that are going millions of light years away, for example. And it reminded me of our series on a Friday afternoon on Winding Down, Looking Up with Ketchel Kirkham. And after a conversation here at Fine Music Radio with Ketchel, I was so fascinated by her involvement with astronomy and with the Square Kilometre Array, the SKA and Carnarvon and all those sorts of things in the Northern Cape, I thought, I want to find out more about Ketchel, more about astronomy, and more about our universe. Ketchel, welcome. On the other side of the microphone you are this time.
Hello, Rodney.
It's very good to have
very
you.
Very funny position to be in on the other side.
Tell me how long Looking Up has been going on.
It's over 10 years now.
Is it really as long as
it's,
that?
Yes, it is. But I always say to people, but it's only a five-minute show. So it's, yes, it's not a big deal in a way for me to put together, but it's important.
It is important, and what strikes me, the ones I hear, and I certainly don't hear everyone, is that you are incredibly up to date. So you must, it clearly is a major interest of yours, isn't it, astronomy?
Yes, it is, and I work in the field, and I'm surrounded by engineers, scientists, and astronomers. And so I'm completely, fully immersed in it these days.
Okay, we're going to find out more about that immersion in a while. But how, trying to think back, Ketchel, how it started, because when I came to Fine Music Radio, which was 12 years ago, it wasn't on the air then. So how did you get yourself a slot?
Started because I'd already got a radio show here, mm-hmm, with Sylvia Brainders. I think you were already here.
Yes, it was.
World, yeah, Cafe.
That's right.
So Sylvia had set up World Cafe. And I was one of the presenters with her. And at the beginning, there was just the two of us. And that was on Wednesday nights at 10 o'clock. And that turned into a two-hour live show. And that was a terrific experience. But after about 6 months of doing that show, I had the idea that it would be nice for people to have just a 5 minutes of a week to think about astronomical things. And astronomy then, I wasn't working in astronomy, but it was a real passion. I think I was probably the chair of the Astronomy Society around that time. I can't remember. And so I came to the station with a proposal. The station I accepted and then plunked it at 10 to 6 on a Friday.
Just as we start our weekend, so it's ideal. And your aim, how would you describe the aim of the program?
Well, it's got quite a deep one, really. I mean, this follows... It's not an original aim. You know, I believe that we should do everything from a very, very wide and long perspective. So this is, I mean, Spinoza first was pointing this out in the 1600s, that we should be thinking sub spe aeternitatis, from,
yes,
the perspective of eternity. Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
But I think that our decisions and our actions should have some ethical basis. And astronomy provides that sort of perspective. A perspective of being outside of the planet. So you can't think about a particular subject when you're completely inside of it. You have to be outside to gain perspective. So whether you're thinking of the environment or thinking of what your work is or what your community is about, it's good to have that external view. And so for me, it's a way of reinforcing this, of giving people just a few minutes in the week to think about something way, way beyond themselves. And by doing that, you then perhaps think about yourself in a larger context. So astronomy does two things at the same time, sort of paradoxical things. So when you do stargazing, when you look at the stars, you either feel very, very small and insignificant, or you can feel the opposite, which is, well, I have consciousness. You know, the stars are, as far as we know, unconscious. Like these chemical factories. Well, we are chemical factories, but we're very complicated. And we have consciousness. We know what we're doing. We have self-awareness. And that can make you feel very big. And also the fact that we have this one life. a very brief one in the
greater scheme
from,
of things.
From the perspective of eternity, we have a very, very short life. And so what are we doing with that time? Mm-hmm. So it's almost a sort of spiritual thing. What, just for a few minutes, to think beyond ourselves, I think is very important.
That's quite an interesting philosophical answer to that. And I think, certainly from what I've heard, you succeed, because there's a variety of topics. You're covering what is happening, and you're also covering the sort of mysteries, in a sense, and guiding people, aren't you, when you do go and look up. You're embracing people. You're inviting them into this magical world with you.
There is another purpose as well, which is to let people know what's happening right here in our neighborhood, because this is the place for astronomy now, you know, South Africa. And the country's doing some fantastic work. So it's singing a different song about what's happening in the country, which is a beautiful thing to do.
And you're talking about these things like the Square Kilometre Array, aren't you, that are so important now in South Africa?
Yes, indeed. That, and we can talk about that in a minute after the first piece of
music. Yes, I was going to just say, before we get involved in this extraordinary SKA concept, I'm interested to know what sort of music you've. I presume you haven't chosen the planets or anything. What have you chosen?
So the first piece of music, this is And the Brother Moves On with Shabaka Hutchings, and The Comet is Coming. So this is an outfit called the Pan-African Space Station, who produce extraordinary, extraordinary music.
I want my guest, Ketchel Kirkham, to back announce that The Brother Moves On with Shabaka Hutchings. Why did you choose that?
Well, apart from the title, The Comet is Coming,
yes.
I just like everything that comes out of the Pan-African Space Station. I've seen Shabaka Hutchings once or twice locally, and just magical music. I really like this kind of music. I love live music. I think the music that we have in Cape Town is just fantastic. And I really liked everything that was going on around, you know, the Mahogany Rooms and what Kesavan Naidu was doing there. I think we've got fantastic live kind of jazz and funk, and yeah, I love that kind of music.
Do you play any instruments at all?
I used to. I used to play the viola very badly, the piano likewise, and the guitar, and I used to sing in one or two choirs, but that was quite a while ago.
Okay. This is People of Notes on Fine Music Radio, and my guest is Ketchel Kirkham, who you will know from Fine Music Radio and the Friday feature 10 to 6 called Looking Up. And astronomy, I think, is going to be a sort of a thread through this program, Ketchel, although I want to find out more about you and what you do on a day-to-day basis. But you hinted at just how lucky South Africa is at the moment, because we're very much part of the international community astronomy-wise, aren't we? And with this Square Kilometre Array in Carnarvon, that's almost put us on the map with more force, even although Sutherland has been operating for so long.
Well, I would say that we've been on the map for over 200 years. Yes, with astronomy. And we are at the epicenter of what's going on now with not only the Southern African Large Telescope and an array of 70-odd telescopes up in Sutherland, but also this new development, the largest telescope in the world. At the moment, I think it's the largest scientific undertaking in the world, the Square Kilometre Array. An extraordinary project to be going on right under our noses here.
But I wanted to say, how could we possibly have been involved for 200 years? That's astonished me.
Well, the South African Astronomical Observatory, that was founded in 1820. But even before that, there were a few astronomers who would come down here and, chart the southern skies. And so they'd come from the northern hemisphere where you have a different view on the night sky and come down here to record what they could see.
My goodness me. So we have been at the forefront, literally, in many ways. And we won the Square Kilometre Array, didn't we? There were various, I think Australia was one of them. And we were the country that won, weren't we?
Australia is still involved. So the Square Kilometre Array is being hosted by two countries, Australia and South Africa. But South Africa's got by far the largest part of it.
Mm-hmm. So I want you to tell me what the Square Kilometre Array does. The purpose of it, I suppose, would be an easy way to tackle it.
So this is a huge array. It's going to be eventually about 2,500 dishes. The current phase is just under 200 dishes. We've currently got 64 dishes up there in the Karoo, although they're not connected, but they've just been constructed. And this is going to answer big questions about physics. So, you know, in the early days, what astronomers were doing was charting the skies, just making maps of the skies. And then they were finding out more about the objects in the sky, you know, what they were composed of. And then the bigger questions came about cosmology. What is the universe made of? And we're still asking those questions. There's still a lot we don't know about dark matter and dark energy and about gravitational waves and all kinds of processes in the universe. And these are the kinds of questions which the SKA will address. So it will address how big the universe is and how far away things are by looking at pulsars and the timing of pulsars. And it will detect gravitational waves and learn more about their part in the formation of the universe.
Can I ask you some naive questions, Ketchell? The Square Kilometre Array, which you said, well, a square kilometre, are all those telescopes, all those dishes connected to one source?
Yes. So they're going to be used rather like a sort of compound eye of a fly, I suppose. So each antenna or each dish can be linked together in what's called interferometry. And then it can all act as one great big collecting area.
So that whole square kilometre with all those dishes comes down to put it rather crudely, one picture.
It could.
Yeah, at huge power.
It could. The fact that you've got so many dishes means that you've got extraordinarily resolution and you can detect things at a great distance. So it's bigger, better, more powerful, more sensitive.
Right.
And so with astronomy, you know, size really is everything. So you want the biggest collecting area possible. If you're doing optical astronomy, you want the biggest mirror possible. And if you're doing radio astronomy, you want big dishes or many, many dishes over a large area. So eventually there will be dishes in other parts of Africa as well. And these will all kind of be knitted together to create a very, very sensitive instrument.
And what about the people working on the project? Are they mostly South African? Are they international? Because you work there in a sense, don't you? You are involved
Yes.
in some way.
I work for a private company called Space Advisory Company. And mostly what we do is design satellites and satellite missions. But we also have a contract with the Square Kilometre Array to carry out the systems engineering of the science data processor, which is the big computer that's going to do all the calculations. And so I work on the science data processor, on this big computer, on the design of it. And that's with a team of local people. But actually, there are hundreds of currently engineers, mainly engineers from all around the world, from a dozen countries working on the Square Kilometre Array. And so the headquarters is in Jodrell Bank, which is in Cheshire, South Manchester.
And so this Square Kilometre Array is connected to that computer-wise as well, is it?
The Square Kilometre Array is being built in Australia and in South Africa, and other components of it are being constructed in different places.
Right.
But the design is being carried out internationally.
Okay.
But we have a substantial office here in Pinelands, which is the headquarters of the South African Square Kilometre Array Enterprise.
Oh, right. And so it's not quite finished yet. You said that only it's going to get much bigger, but is it operational?
No, it's not operational yet. It won't be for, oh, how many years?
Oh, really?
Well, now, part of it, Meerkat, is going to be operational next year. And that's your 64 dishes. Mm. They will be integrated into the Square Kilometre Array, but it's going to be another at least, I think, 5 years before the phase one of Square Kilometre Array is completed. Where are we now? 2017, 2018?
Yes. End of 2017.
So
you're thinking in cosmic terms, Kitchell.
Yes, exactly. And then we have phase two, and that's going to be, you know, in the 2030s when that's finished. And then the project has a 50-year operational lifespan. This is a super huge project.
Mm-hmm.
It will probably go on beyond that.
Yes, I'm sure it will because of the developments that are going to happen between now and then.
Mm.
Right, well, now let's ponder all that. What's your next piece of music, Kitchell?
Right, so the next piece of music brings us to Jodrell Bank, actually. This is live from Jodrell Bank. So this is a band called Elbow, live from Jodrell Bank, and the track is called Lippy Kids.
Okay.
On the corner again, lippy kids on the corner begin saddling like crows, and I never perfected that simian stroke. Cigarettes and it was everything then. Do you know those days I called her? Build the rocket boys.
There's our second choice of music from my guest, Kitchell Kirkham. That was called Elbow Live, wasn't it? Lippy Kids is the name of the track, and the group is called Elbow.
The group's called Elbow.
Elbow.
Yes. Elbow is it's in the sort of indie genre of music.
Okay.
And that was live from Jodrell Bank.
Oh, so it's not Elbow Live. It's Elbow live at Jodrell Bank with a track called Lippy Kids.
Yes, that's right. And Guy Garvey, who's the lead singer of Elbow, he has my favorite radio show, which is Guy Garvey's Finest Hour on Radio 6, BBC Radio 6. I'm sorry, Fine Music Radio, but BBC Radio 6 just does it for me. That's my favorite radio station.
What a traitor you are here in this studio. I think it's easier to say Chopin's Nocturne in E-flat major, Opus 6, number 2. My guest is Ketchel Kirk, and we're talking mostly astronomy at the moment because Ketchel does our weekly insert called Looking Up on a Friday on Winding Down at 10 to 6. But as you heard, she's also involved with a square kilometer array. And the other thing I want to cross-question you about is the South African Astronomical Observatory, which is different from the SKA, isn't it? That's the big one we all know in Sutherland, is that right?
Yes, so the South African Astronomical Observatory, that's the headquarters of astronomy in South Africa. It was founded in 1820. It's still there in the building that was designed for it. It's still the headquarters in observatory, which is why it's called observatory.
Mm-hmm.
The telescopes are now obviously no longer in Cape Town with light pollution and so on, so they're up in Sutherland. And there's about 70 telescopes up there, so that's mm-hmm. a big international observatory up there.
And it's a very respected observatory. Has it done great things over the years?
Oh, indeed. And now we've got the Southern African Large Telescope there, which is, you know, a 10-meter mirror, a very large mirror. So there's tremendous work being done in South Africa. And a lot of a lot of developments in astronomy happened here. And there were a lot of firsts, particularly in astrophotography, happened in Cape Town.
Gosh, I wonder how many people know that. I certainly didn't know that. So for example, earlier when you said 200 years ago, I thought, what? I didn't realize Cape Town, well, South Africa, and as you say, specifically Cape Town, seems to me to be very much at the forefront of astronomy.
It is, absolutely. I think most astronomers and engineers are not self-publicists. And they don't necessarily have to bring themselves into contact with the general public.
Yes.
I think there's more outreach being done now than ever before, but that's concentrated at schools mm-hmm. more than the general public, which is another reason to do my little show, Looking Up on a Friday, to get the message out there. You know, there's something really big happening here.
Well, I didn't really have to twist your arm, Ketchel, did I, to come onto this program? You were quite enthusiastic to share all these things.
Indeed. And it's not just about astronomy, it's also space. People aren't aware that we have a national space agency in South Africa. And that track, Lippy Kids, that you heard about, it had that refrain, build a rocket, boys. We're not building big rocket ships in South Africa yet. But, you know, we do have a small space industry, and I'm part of it.
As you say, building satellites and things.
Yes.
Which we do launch from time to time, don't we?
We don't launch from South Africa, but we have... We have had satellites launched. In fact, the company that I work for had one launched this year. So there's various launch sites around the world that people choose from. And they're based on, you know, the topography of the planet and where the sensible places are to launch. Well, I mean, we could launch from South Africa, but it's a very, very expensive undertaking.
So you would build a little satellite and it would go off somewhere to be launched somewhere
else.
Yes,
in fact, the EnSite 1 satellite that Space Advisory Company built, that was put onto the International Space Station and sort of pushed out there with a lot of other satellites.
Ketchel, are there lots of budding astronomers in South Africa? Do we have students? Because are you involved at UCT or at all? I can't remember.
I've just finished a master's in UCT in space studies, in space engineering.
Mm.
So there's an outfit there called Space Lab, which is just 4 years old. So there's a growing number of students. And, of course, there's the astronomy department, which is thriving there as well.
Is it thriving? Oh, that's
interesting. Yes, indeed. And the NASA program, which is a program designed to get more students into doing PhDs and staying with astronomy.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, in fact, these people will then have a career path with all these things happening. If you want to be an astronomer, if you're a budding astronomer out there listening, it's the time to go into astronomy.
It's a great place to be, not just for astronomers, but also computer scientists and engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you see, people could do the astronomy from anywhere in the world. They can receive the data over the internet from anywhere. But we in South Africa, we need engineers and computer scientists to keep the thing going.
Okay. And just briefly to touch on the South African Astronomical Observatory again, that's all state-of-the-art equipment. You mentioned this 10-meter mirror. And I've never looked through a telescope like that, and I would love to. And I believe it is possible, isn't it? You can go up there
and
look.
Yes, you don't look through telescopes these days, unless it's an amateur telescope.
Oh, dear.
Of the kind that
that amateurs. Stands on your balcony.
Yes, exactly. And I'm a keen amateur astronomer. You know, I love to stargaze, and I like to still put my eye against an eyepiece and see what's there. But no, for the last 40 or 50 years, people have received data from the computer. It's not very romantic. And in fact, astronomers don't even have to stay up at night these days.
Oh, no.
I know,
you're ruining everything.
It's quite sad, isn't it?
So can you not go to the SA Astronomical Observatory and put your eye up against this 10-meter telescope?
No, you can't. But there are other powerful telescopes there for the public. So you can look through telescopes at the up in Sutherland at the observatory. You can. And indeed at the open nights here at the observatory, which is the second and fourth Saturdays of every month. I often talk about those on Looking Up. And the amateurs are there with our telescopes. And indeed, there's an old telescope, the McLean, which you can also look through. And so it is possible. But no, all the data comes, you know, it's detected by CCD chips, and then the data goes to computers. And
no, that's not right. If I want to see Saturn's rings, I want to see it through a telescope.
Indeed.
With my eye attached to
yes,
it.
Yes, sirree, which is why I still like to, you know, go out with a telescope. And
our planetarium down here in Cape Town is quite a posh affair, isn't it? And it's just been extensively renovated.
Yes, the digital dome. Yes, it's fantastic. And that, again, is kind of connected to the SKA. Because the square kilometre array is going to produce so much data, you can't then depict that on a two-dimensional graph on a piece of paper. You need to look at changes in the data through time and look in three dimensions. So we now have this digital dome with extremely powerful graphical capability. So the scientists can use that to visualize their data in many new creative ways.
Oh, do they? Do the scientists use it? It's not just for visitors.
That's
it's not
right.
just a tourist attraction.
Not at all. It's not.
It's
just
a working laboratory.
It's an educational tool. It's an entertainment tool. But it's also, indeed, as you say, it's a place where researchers can go and look at their data in new ways.
You know, I haven't been to a planetarium ever in my life.
Shame on you, Rodney. It's wonderful.
I've never looked through a telescope. I've never seen the bumps on the moon or worked out if it's made of cheese or not, or the Saturn rings.
The gauntlet is thrown down. I shall find a good night when the rings of Saturn are abroad and we shall go.
Okay, it's a date.
Excellent.
We've got a date with Ketrell Kirkham. Ketrell, what is your next piece of music? Something quite different coming up, I spy.
Yes, Speminalium, Thomas Tallis. So I thought, well, I have to have something really deep and meaningful. This piece of music, to me, is the most tremendous piece of music ever written. I do like Gregorian chant, I like early music, but this piece is just better than anything.
This is the one by Thomas Tallis, which is a 40-part choral work. It has 40 completely distinct parts. It's not just 40 people singing the usual soprano, alto, tenor, bass. There are 40 separate lines of music. It's great. It's extraordinary. But now look, we've got a problem. It's quite long. So can you bear us fading out after about 4 minutes?
Yes, if you must.
Okay, here we go. Listen to this hypnotic music.
Thank you.
sadly, yes, we do have to fade there. I know it's a terrible thing to do. That is that extraordinary work by Thomas Tallis, a choral work in 40 parts called Spem in Alium. And it was the choice of my guest, Ketrel Kirkham, on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio. And if you've been listening, you will know that we're talking very much about astronomy. Ketrel does our feature on a Friday called Looking Up on Winding Down at 10 to 6, but she's also involved with the Square Kilometre Array, the South African Astronomical Observatory, the Planetarium. But Ketrel, just let's do a little chronological thing. But before we do that, as we were listening to that music, you said that it's an important piece of music for you because it changed your life at a low ebb.
Yes, it was about 20 years ago. And I think everybody has, you know, times in their life which are just the pits. And that was one for me. That was the worst. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I was listening to the radio, and that piece of music was playing. And it was, you know, I don't believe in spooks and spirits and angels. I'm one of these dyed-in-the-wool empiricists, I'm afraid. However, you know, philosophically dull that position may be, but really it was like angels were fluttering in the room with me. This piece of music was so extraordinary. So I didn't catch what it was, and the next day, I was living in Edinburgh at the time, and the next day I went to a local music shop, and I said to them, there was a lady serving on the counter, and she said, can I help you? And I said, well, I was listening to a piece of music at 3 o'clock this morning from the radio, and I don't know what it was.
Oh, and, dear. We hate those questions. Yes.
And it was sort of like something Gregorian, or it was very hypnotic. And she said, oh, Spem in Alium by Thomas Tallis. I said, yeah, well,
how would she
and she
that?
Played it. Oh. And it was she played it for me then. It was exactly the one.
Oh, right.
She just kind of went straight to it. She must have seen something in my eyes. You know,
yes, the effect of Spem in Alium on you. She obviously saw it in other customers as well.
Yes. Yeah.
But, Ketrel, how did you get involved in... I mean, I'm not entirely sure I know what you do. Well, you said earlier you work at UCT with satellite building.
Oh, so I work for a company called Space Advisory Company,
right,
which builds satellites. And I work for them, but on the Square Kilometre Array, on the computer, the science data processor. And I've just completed a master's at UCT.
That's right. That's what you were mentioning.
In space engineering. So there's quite a lot of different interests there.
Mm-hmm. But how did you get into astronomy? Has that been a lifelong thing?
I was interested in astronomy as a child. So I was brought up on the Scottish border in a little village in Cumbria. And we didn't have streetlights when I was a kid. It was very, very dark. And so I did love looking up at the stars. Then we got street lights and I went to the secondary school and, you know, I forgot all about it. But then when I went to live in Uganda, again, the 3 or 4 nights of the week, even in Kampala, we didn't have electricity. And there was the night skies again. And I thought, my goodness, where have they been all my life? But I couldn't study astronomy from Uganda. I needed to come somewhere where there was some...
What were you doing in Uganda?
And so I was running an information systems company.
Okay.
Working in the private sector, although nobody's very very much in the private sector in a place like Uganda. So a lot of our projects were paid for by aid agencies.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Uganda. I had a tremendous 4 years there. But I couldn't take, you know, astronomy any further there. And plus, I knew, you know, it was after a particular time, it was time to go. And I came to South Africa actually to be a lecturer in information systems at UCT. But I spent quite a bit of time in the astronomy department. I kind of went and gatecrashed Astronomy 101. This was being taught by the late Tony Ferrell, who became my mentor. And he kind of knew what to do with my random enthusiasm for everything up there.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of pointed me in various directions.
He did,
and very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Peter Martinez, Professor Martinez at the University of Cape Town, he's also managed to challenge my energies in some useful directions, I'm happy to say. So that's how it all started. But it was, I mean, it still is quite an obsession. And it's not something I could see around. So I was in the IT industry or information systems, but couldn't quite manage to see beyond astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very lucky to have found an outlet.
It does sound. And as one is very aware of your passion, just listening to your little insert on a Friday, one is very aware of that. So you could say that you are doing a labor of love. Very often, as we do here on radio, people say you must love your job or you do lots of shows. It's a labor of love, isn't it?
Yes, and I must say I love radio too. I like listening to the radio and I love podcasts. I think it's a fantastic medium for getting messages across and for enjoying. You know, you can do other things at the same time as listening to the radio, or you can just sit and listen. It's a beautiful thing to do.
Well, let's listen to your next piece of music. Kate Bush, that's a bit of a change from Thomas Tallis.
Yes, I just really love this piece of music. It's got the most gorgeous bass line. And again, she mentions comets, comets and stars. And I love her voice.
Could be honeycomb. In a sea of honey. A sky of honey. Whose shadow.
The voice of Kate Bush. Kate, whenever I hear her, I think of that song Wuthering Heights from what, the 80s? Gosh, that 70s. Unique voice. 70s,
it,
really.
It was actually, I think, something like 1973 or 4. It was quite early
Good
on.
Grief.
She was so way ahead of her time.
She was. Mm. And what an extraordinary voice. Ariel, that was called. And one of the choices here on People of Note on Fine Music Radio of my guest, Ketchel Kirkham, and we're talking astronomy. And after all we've said about space and telescopes and out there in the universe, here's a silly question. Do you watch science fiction films or read science fiction? I presume you're going to say no.
I love science fiction.
Oh, really?
My favorite film is Contact, which was based on the book by Carl Sagan. I really adore sci-fi. I don't read as much sci-fi. I suppose the reading the genre of sci-fi can be a little bit tortuous. I don't think they're always written so engagingly. Although Michelle Faber's book of Strange New Things, it's not exactly sci-fi, but it is one of my favorite books of all time, that one.
So this is an interesting link as to why you like astronomy so much, because there is an element of science fiction about it.
Indeed.
I mean, Contact, the obvious question for me to ask is, it seems our greatest search is for life out there. Is there another civilization?
Yes. Yes, it is one of the great questions. Are we alone in the universe? Mm. And I guess we'll never stop asking it until we've got the answer.
Well, it's possible we will never have the answer.
It is possible. Mm. I don't know. It's hard to think of us being the only sentient beings.
Yes, since it's so huge. Mm. I often find it very difficult to absorb how big the universe is. I remember seeing a diagram somewhere that kept going out and out and out, once we're out of our galaxy in the Milky Way, to the vastness of the universe. And it's quite extraordinary. And the other thing is that all this work that goes on is making the Earth a safer place, in that we are now able to tell if we're about to be hit by an asteroid.
Oh, well, we think we are. I mean, we have the Near Earth Object Institution, which is always looking out for things. But, you know, Comet McNaught came in 2007. That was a beautiful comet. Do you remember that one?
I do, indeed.
Gorgeous. We had such a good view of it from Cape Town. But that we didn't know about until it was upon us. Although that wasn't close to us, but still. And then we've had a number of meteors that exploded just above the surface of Earth recently. Mm. And now, in October 2017, there was an interstellar object came by. We've never seen such a thing before. So I think the universe and even our solar system is teeming with stuff we don't know about.
Was that cigar-shaped thing that they were talking about that came from another galaxy,
Another solar system.
Another solar system.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And we are able to see all these things now. That's what's so extraordinary.
That's right.
And talking about being a sort of ambassador for astronomy, remember Carl Sagan, the remarkable Carl Sagan, and that series called Cosmos, which I think, A, was so well done, and B, introduced so many people to the mysteries and the wonders of space. And as you said right at the beginning, that's what we do. We set out to know what's about us. And you also said you're interested in the future.
Yes, what's coming around the corner. I'm not sure where that interest came from, but it's always been there.
Mm-hmm.
It's what's next, which is why I haven't chosen lots of music from my past, because that's kind of gone.
Okay.
But this next piece of music is actually from my past. I think about 15 years old now. And this is from my interest in African music particularly. And it's very upbeat and very, very lively.
Okay.
So we're going to end on a high note.
What is it called?
And this is Angelique Kidjo, and the track's called Agolo from her album Aye. And what a voice this powerhouse of a woman has.
I love the fact that you love listening to music in this world that you live in. You live almost out of this world, in that you're looking up all the time, literally, because your series is called that. And sharing as well with us, and I think that's great. It's a series that I think has done very well on Fine Music Radio, so that's why I wanted you to be my guest. Ketchel Kirkham, thank you very much, and keep us up to date on Looking Up.
Thank you very much, Rodney. It's been a pleasure.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Well, hello, I'm Alan Committee, and you can currently find me at the Theatre on the Bay in Kemp's Bay as I entertain the crowds in my latest hilarious stand-up extravaganza, Planet Mirth. This show is a docu-comedy and takes a gleeful look at everything in high definition. It's funnier than an Alistair Could See a press conference, and by the end, you will be crying with laughter, which means you can gather all your tears, take them home, and water your gardens. It's a pleasure. So don't miss Alan Committee, Planet Mirth, Theatre on the Bay.